Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Beyond Sleep Training Podcast, a podcast dedicated to sharing real tales of how people have managed sleep in their family outside of sleep training culture. Because sleep looks different with a baby in the house. And because every family is different, there is no one-size-fits-all approach to take. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is being recorded, the Kalkadoon people. I pay my respects to the elders of this nation and the many other nations our guests reside in from the past, present and emerging. We honour Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and the unique cultural and spiritual relationships to the land, water and seas, as well as their rich contributions to society, including the birthing and nurturing of children.
Welcome back to the Beyond Sleep Training Podcast. I'm your host, Carly Grubb, and with me today is the wonderful Rebecca Seafi. Rebecca runs the Growing Gently psychology practice that's based in the Blue Mountains in New South Wales. But I became familiar with Rebecca's work through her online spaces. She's got a fabulous Instagram and also Facebook feed that really, really settles the heart and mind of parents who are going through the process of parenting their babies and young children gently and also looking after themselves. So I really appreciate having Rebecca's voice in that space. She is an Australian psychologist and she has got years upon years of experience of working with families before she actually welcomed her babies herself. And it has actually really impacted on your passion in the area, having your own babies, hasn't it, Rebecca?
Definitely. It totally, like, I always worked with children, but it's kind of changed my direction and shifted my focus a lot. So definitely revolutionized my work.
I love that. And it's something that when it comes to motherhood and welcoming our babies, sometimes it can feel like it takes a lot away from our previous life, but it also enriches it in so many ways as well. So it's beautiful to hear about how it's actually had an impact on your practice, because it's quite a profound shift that we often find ourselves in when we become a parent. So it's beautiful. Now, just for people watching in our podcast supporter group, you'll be able to see the video recording of this episode, and you'll probably see that Rebecca's got a little jiggle going on, and that's because she's got a precious tiny person just out of view here. How old's your babe, Rebecca?
She'll be 9 weeks tomorrow, so we're doing a bit of multitasking, so we'll see how we go.
Very impressive, and congratulations on your new person. And for anyone who's hearing those gorgeous newborn grunts and squeaks, I'm sure it's making you as clucky as it is me as well. It's so very sweet. So thank you for multitasking and still coming on today.
It's such a great thing, actually. I think this time around, I feel more empowered to keep my babies close rather than try to ship them off to elsewhere where I work. So I'm just grateful, though, that the work experiences that I find myself in, I'm able to do that as well.
It's fantastic because it does also show like the things that we can do while we're also still keeping our babies close, like you said, because sometimes it can seem like such a tricky concept to wrap your head around, like how could that even possibly be? And yet we are seeing it in action before us today. So thank you for being that model that other families also need to see. Now we'll dive into your sleep story. Now I'm really curious. I always ask our guests, how did you think you were going to handle sleep with your family before you welcomed your first baby?
I'll be honest, I didn't think too much about it. So I think just generally when I thought of parenting, so when I was pregnant in particular, I was quite anxious about the birth, but I thought that I would have the parenting side pretty much down pat. I think that's because I had worked with lots of children across the age span in a variety of settings, like counselling, in groups, in childcare. And so I was pretty confident in my abilities. But I think what I underestimated, firstly, is the role that temperament plays in and the kind of the nature side of the nature-nurture influence. So that was a big thing that I only really learnt when I got my little babe. I realised that I wasn't as in control of things as I was thinking I would be. And then the other side of it was the noise becomes a lot louder when you're a parent. It's a lot easier when you're a professional to drown out the noise of others. Well, that's what I found anyway. And your confidence is often higher because, you know, you've had the training and you're in a position of, I'll just call it as it is, it's power. Even though, I've always tried to have very collaborative relationships with my clients, you know, I am coming in as someone with experience. But when it's your own, that kind of all falls away and you realise that it's just you and you're totally human and you kind of have to navigate things yourself and everyone around you does have an opinion and they're not always bad, but that can be really hard to navigate as well.
Absolutely. So, and that next level of vulnerability that you have in your postpartum and also just being a parent yourself is so very different to the distance you can hold as a professional.
Yeah, definitely. And you've got these children that you've got this emotional attachment to as well. So you can get really emotional when things, when they are and when things are changing, which you don't, you have empathy towards the children you're encountering work and you can feel quite emotional, but yeah, there's that different type of separation that exists.
Absolutely.
But I learned very quickly in my parenting journey that things weren't going to be what I kind of envisioned. I think it, particularly with sleep, after a difficult birth, when I first saw my daughter, her eyes were just open wide and she was just super alert. And I thought it was such a relief because, this was a sign of life, right? But then as the days went on, she would still be awake at 4 a.m. We wouldn't have slept or settled for hours and hours, maybe 8 hours of just rocking and trying to put her in the crib, then picking her up again and then putting her down, picking her up. And I was like, okay, this is okay. She's not going in the crib. Something's not working here. And I think I persisted with that for quite a long time before I found my groove. And I think it was quite early in our journey that I started to see that the outside noise was really affecting how I wanted to parent. Because I think I had lots of knowledge about the biology of sleep and the importance of attachment in parenting. And I'd worked with lots of children, particularly in the toddler years and up around emotional development. And what I, how I practiced and what I knew in that kind of space, the children, how we respond to children was really different to what the norm was with babies. And I became quite confused because I knew how I did once a parent, and that was I really wanted to be responsive, and I wanted to have a secure attachment. So I knew the goals, but what was missing was how to get there. And so with my little one, which I would say she's definitely what you call, Carly, a little sparkler. And I think that really validated me when I heard the term little sparkler, because I'm like, oh, there's more of these children around. Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? You feel so isolated when you have a little sparkler, because they really are quite something else. And unless you've had one, it's you can feel very isolated. Not many people can relate.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that there is an element that unless you've gone through it, you don't really know what it's like. Like I remember thinking parents had told me that their little ones weren't sleeping, but as much as I was like, wow, that must be really hard, you do not understand the degree of sleep deprivation and how powerless you feel until you've gone through it. So that's something that I definitely bring to my role now as a psychologist. I definitely understand it a lot more.
On an intimate level.
Yes. Yeah.
You were saying that. So initially you were having to rock her off to sleep and pop her down in her crib. Did you have it in your mind that you needed to put her down? Was that the only, like, was that your version of this is how it's done?
Yes, definitely. Because I think that even though I was wanting to be responsive, there was definitely that chatter and that noise coming from a variety of places, not just, you know, the one person or the one book I read, about how, you don't want to spoil your baby, you want to put them down because you create a rod for your own back. And even though I didn't want to leave her cry, and I tried never to do that, that was a thing that I had to put her down. And then it was very confusing because I put her down and she would just scream. It wasn't just a little grunting or discomfort. It was 0 to 100 with just putting her down. And so all that noise about putting them down, drowsy, but all wait.
Drowsy, but wait. Yeah.
Hilarious. I was just like, this is impossible. I was like, do babies actually calm themselves down when they're 100? And I know that they don't. It takes a lot. But at the time, especially with sleep deprivation, it's hard to make those decisions and think that through.
That's it. It's hard to keep it in context. And I think, too, the other thing people listening along would either relate to or need to have it put in context for them is, it sounds like there was a huge amount of effort in getting your baby to sleep in the first place, only to place them down and have them wake back up again. That is a part of the fatigue cycle you find yourself in while you're fighting against that biology of your baby to be close to you. And I think it feeds the beast, doesn't it? It's like, of course this is a problem for you, because how on earth could you possibly maintain that kind of cycle in the longer term? So do you think that played into your anxiety around that?
Definitely. I think there's a sense of helplessness that comes as a parent when you kind of put everything you have into settling your baby only for them to then become unsettled because of something you did, such as putting them down. And I think that when sleep training gets peddled around, it's kind of considered a tool for parental mental health. So often there's criticism towards anyone that doesn't advocate for sleep training because it's like, well, what about the parents' mental health? You know, we want children to sleep because that's good for parents' mental health. But in fact, it can actually feel terrible as a parent. And I am talking from my own experience, but also through talking with other parents as well, the when you are trying to get them down and get them to settle themselves, it can become really helpless, like we mentioned, isolating, like we mentioned. And, yeah, that's not a good way to start parenthood.
But also, I don't, it's like I, for me, I can speak from my perspective, it was like a constant reminder of me failing and not being able to live up to this standard and being mentally unwell. I was depressed. It was almost like I couldn't even get that part of my recovery right. Like, how was I going to get well if I couldn't even get this bit right? Mm. And so it fed the beast in ways that I don't think, like you say, I don't think it's always acknowledged in conversations around how sleep training is supposedly saving so many parents from mental health struggles. It's actually creating a lot of those mental health struggles too. And we can't silence that part of the story because there's more to it, like we're discussing today.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm curious then. So you are in the depths of it all. You've got this really sparkly little baby, won't be put down. What happened next?
So I did try different things. I knew that it's really hard to get yourself out of those cycles. When you're sleep deprived and you're very like emotional and feeling quite helpless. So I did try and seek out extra help. And that's where I really realized how ingrained sleep training culture is. And I'll say that I wasn't even aware of, you know, when I thought of sleep training in my journey, I thought of the cry it out method, which is definitely what I didn't want to do. But I didn't realize how maybe sleep consultants disguised themselves. So I did seek out a sleep consultant and I said up front, I do not want to let my baby cry. I want it to be a responsive, I want to respond to her needs. And she agreed that she wasn't going to do that and she had other options. So I do hesitate when I'm telling this story because I do think that this sleep consultant was doing what she thought was best. I don't think she was intentionally causing harm. But when I spoke to her, she pretty much, upon meeting me, gave me information and a schedule that would suit my baby without asking me anything about my baby, which I thought that was a big red flag for me, especially because, you know, things were playing on my mind. You know, we've had this kind of distressing birth. Surely that had something to do with it. Surely her temperament has something to do with it. Surely my temperament has something to do with it. So we got this schedule. When I started implementing it, I quickly realized that this was a lot harder than she'd let on. And I think one of the big things was I felt trapped to these awake windows where I was like, how do I even do my grocery shopping within a 2-hour wake period and be home to put her in the cot that I know she wasn't going to go down to? So again, very isolating to have to stay at home to just put baby to sleep, wake up, feed her, put her back down to sleep within 2 hours. Anyway, my baby did not respond well to that schedule and the settling techniques that were suggested. And I remember one day she was screaming because she'd become so dialed up at the whole process that even when I was holding her, she was very upset and was hard to dial her down. And that's when the sleep consultant told me just to let her cry. And at first I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. You told me, you promised me you wouldn't. I put her down and obviously she was screaming. And then I started bawling my eyes out because it's so distressing. And I picked her up. And I never looked back since. I just held her because I realized that that's what she was wanting. And we then just followed her lead and we worked out a flow that worked for us. So she really liked, she was awake all the time pretty much. And so I found it a lot easier to wake up and get out and about, go on walks, go to the park. If we're at home, she'd be with me doing the, washing or other chores, helping me, well, as a baby watching me, but then became kind of sitting up with me while I was cooking. We sang songs and we just enjoyed the day. And that's when it came a lot easier. And that's when, around that time, that's when I also found the Beyond Sleep Training Project. And I was like, oh, hey, there's like this whole, there's this whole other group of people that also don't want to sleep train and also want to respect the needs of their children. And that was really comforting. So I think that's what I needed at that point to realize that I wasn't doing the wrong thing from her, by her, and that I wasn't alone and that there was other people.
I think that's really powerful because it's one thing to come to that decision for yourself, because I know with my first one, I came to that decision, it brings you a certain level of relief. But for me, I was still very covert in what I was doing because I was almost ashamed of the fact that I was doing it this way. Like I, I hadn't dealt with the fact that I couldn't do it how everyone else did it. And so I was lonely. And so for that part of part of your well-being, to know that you really are not alone, you're in very good company with many other families who are doing sleep with their family this way, is actually, it's really great for your confidence and great for your soul, because we're social creatures. We like to know that we can relate to other people and connect to other people through experience. So there's a lot of power in that, and I'm glad that we were able to offer that for you. Now, I just wanted to touch on, because I feel like for people listening, it's a really powerful shift for a lot of families, and that is the idea of being able to get things done while your baby's awake and not just waiting for those magical times when you can put your baby down and leave them to get your jobs done. Was that a profound shift for you? How did you find that?
For me, it kind of was quite natural, and I'm a big reader, and so I did look into the Montessori approach to education, where it's like including your children in daily tasks so that I can learn to become independent in them. And I also have a daughter that I will acknowledge her temperament led to that. She was really keen to learn. And she took to it really well. So it's a bit about, following her lead and kind of doing what I had to do to get stuff done as well. But then also feeling validated that this was beneficial to her because she was indirectly learning as well. And it was always on her terms. If she was upset or didn't want to, sit up near me at the kitchen bench while I'm cooking, then I would definitely follow her lead. There was lots of times where we were eating dinner at 8 o'clock at night because I hadn't got to it. But even giving her that opportunity, I had the my mindset is you give them choices and opportunities and then they kind of tell you what to do. So it was kind of like, would you like to sit on the lounge all day or being held, or would you like to maybe sit up with me or me to wear you while we're cooking? She would quickly tell me what she wanted to do, but I found that a lot of the times she was being like a low sleep need babe. She was actually wanting that kind of stimulation. So she actually was settling more when we were doing things rather than when we were just sitting in the lounge. And I think that's another trap that's easy to fall into. You don't want to sleep train. Yeah, 100%. But that doesn't mean you need to sit on the lounge all day and hold your unsettled baby, which again, I definitely fell into that trap in the early days, just watching Netflix. And there's a time for that, and it can be good. But when it's not serving your mental health or the functioning of your entire household, then it's freeing to know that you can get up and continue on with your day.
And babies have been moving to the rhythm of family life around the world forever. Like it's actually the way we're biologically program to be as a baby and as a parent. And so I heard you mention too that like wearing your baby, I think for a lot of families, figuring out how to be able to do that, baby wearing as a tool can be a fantastic way to get out. And I know for my very sparkly first guy, it was absolutely a game changer for me to realize that some of his yawning and whinging and, you know, that kind of unsettledness for him was boredom. It wasn't tired signs, because I bought so much into sleep training culture. I assumed that I was missing all these, you know, these tired signs, but he wasn't tired for sleep. He was tired for stimulation. He was bored out of his brains. And I didn't need to do much to meet those stimulation needs. He just loved going outside. He loved playing with the grass. He touching the dog, you know, go out shopping in the carrier. He's, you know, bright-eyed baby, rarely slept, but, you know, he was quite happy on my chest in the carrier out and about. And it totally changed my mental space, because I could finally get out and do stuff. So I'm really impressed to hear that was also part of your story. And I know that for in your practice, you've been a part of the Possum's neurodevelopmental care program. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I actually found out about Possum's via the Beyond Sleep Training Facebook group. Had heard lots of people mention it, so I decided to check it out. I went on their website and I was like amazed. Because I was like, everything that I was intuitively doing, as well as the things that I knew about the biology of sleep, had been researched and studied by Dr. Pamela Douglas and put into this the program of neuroprotective developmental care. So I was immediately won over. And so then me being me, I didn't just leave it at that. I studied and studied and became accredited in that. And I think that was partly, I mean, by the time I got onto that, the journey, like my first born was nearly two. And we were still having, like, she was still waking hourly. So we hadn't resolved some of this sleep issues that were happening. But we were, like, we had found our groove and I was managing a lot better. But I decided that I would study it, not only for future children, but also because by then I decided that maybe that was something I wanted to pursue, because I found it so hard to find support, professional support in my journey that aligned with my values. I thought this would be a great opportunity to become that person, particularly within my local area, that people could turn to work together on their sleep journey. So that's when I became, that's when I started researching and studying that. And it made a lot of sense to me. Like I mentioned, getting out of the house. So Possum's talk about the need for sensory nourishment and how that can help the babies dial down. And it also helps with parental mental health as well. So it was just really validating.
No, I'm just looking at our time. We're actually already coming up to our 30 minutes. And I'm so glad you managed to bring up those elements of Possum's, because we haven't actually had that in any of our previous episodes yet. And I'm going to make sure that we've got all the links to the work that Dr. Pam has done in Possum's in our show notes for today. But I'm just wondering, just to finish off the episode, is there a tip that you'd like to share with our listeners?
So I think that just in regards to the Beyond Sleep Training group, I think that being part of that group is extremely influential, because I think a lot, when you have in your mind your values, I talk a lot about it's hard to then kind of stick to them when you've got all this background noise. So surrounding yourself with people that do share those similar values, I think it's really important. And so my tip would be to seek out other people that share your values and spend time around them, because what other people say and the messages you hear from others, whether it's from TV shows, whether it's from podcasts, whether it's on social media, whether it's from family and friends, whether you are intentionally doing it or not, they get internalized and become your thoughts. And so they might not be thoughts that you own and believe in, but nevertheless, they're there. So surrounding yourself with similar people, not to say that you need to give everyone else that has different views from you the cold shoulder, but making sure that you do have some of those positive influences alongside you in the journey is very important.
I love that. I think thank you for mentioning the group for us too, because it's everything we'd hoped we could do for families, because it was something that I felt like was really lacking in my own experience. And so being able to have, in the absence of real life villages for many people, we try to create that online space for people to soundboard, office, vent when they need to, and get the support they need to rally through. Because sometimes you just need a safe space to let it all out and be reassured that you're actually doing an amazing job. And I can safely say, Rebecca, you have done an outstanding multitasking job there, and your little sidekick is a champion. She seems like a very happy baby, and I'm so glad that you came on today with us, even though you're only 9 weeks postpartum. Well done, you.
Thank you. I'll say for all those mums out there that are thinking, oh, my gosh, there's no way that I could be doing this. There's no way I could have been doing this 9 months postpartum with my first little sparkler. This is a very different baby, and I think that it's really taught me temperament does have so much to do with it. So, yeah,
absolutely.
She makes it easy for me.
There you go. And I actually love that context, because there's two people in this little party you've got going on there, and she's playing a part, but that's only due to the temperament that she has. And it's also okay to accept if you've got a baby who could not be doing that, because I was similar, actually. I remember looking at people with my first baby and they'd be returning to work. I'm like, how could you physically do that? Because it really wasn't on the cards for my guy, but it really is for other people with their different temperamented babies. So it's a really great way to just make sure that people listening along aren't feeling like that's a layer of pressure to add to themselves. You do not need to be multitasking at 9 weeks postpartum, but hey, if it's something you'd like to do and your babe's going to be all right with it, look at Rebecca go. So thank you so much. Now, Rebecca, before we finish, where can we find you so that we're sure to drop all those links for people to look up your work?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram and Facebook at Growing Gently Psychology.
Beautiful. And we absolutely love your work. And so we'll be sure to have all of those for you in there. And I just want to say once more, thank you so much. And thanks to Babe for being such a champion while we got to hear your story today.
Thanks so much for having me, Carly. Love to be part of this great work that you're doing.
Thank you. I really hope you enjoyed the podcast today. The information we discussed was just that, information only. It is not specific advice. If you take any action following something you've heard from our show today, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that advice be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or any other advice. Please reach out to me if you do have any questions or if there's a topic you'd really like us to be covering. And if you know somebody who'd really benefit from listening to our podcast, please be sure to pass our name along. Also, check out our free peer support group, the Beyond Sleep Training Project, and our wonderful website, www.littlesparklers.org. If you'd like even more from the show, you can join us as a patron on Patreon, and you can find a link for that in our show notes. If listening is not really your jam, we also make sure we put full episode transcripts on our Little Sparklers website for you to also enjoy, and fully captioned YouTube videos as well on our Little Sparklers channel. So thanks again for listening today. We really enjoy bringing this podcast to you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.